This teaching comes to you from the team at St. Mark's, Darling Point, Sydney. We hope that it blesses you.
The first reading is Matthew chapter 7, starting at verse 21. Jesus said, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons, and in your name perform many miracles?' And then I will tell them plainly, 'I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers.' Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash." When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Good morning. The second reading is taken from John chapter 1, verses 1 to 4. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. This is the word of the Lord.
I was at Westfield Bondi the other day. Other families lined up to get their Santa photos, and I overheard a little girl and her mother talking. Her mother asked, "What are you drawing?" She says, "I'm making a card for Santa." "Oh," the mother said, "have you made a wish list yet?" "Yes," she says confidently, "I'm asking Santa for an iPhone." I'm wondering if at this point the mother was thinking maybe this is the year to burst her bubble about Santa. Well, today is the first Sunday of Advent, Happy New Year, in our church calendar. And this first Sunday of Advent may come as a bit of a surprise. Walk past any shop front, or scroll on any website, or have a look on any social media platform, and you will not find the words Advent. This year, the beginning of Advent is crowded out between the biggest sales event of the year that surpassed Boxing Day, Black Friday, and Cyber Monday. The Christian calendar has been replaced by the consumer calendar. In a world of wish lists and consumer desires, we're reminded, though, of another kind of preparation, one not for Santa, but for the coming of Christ. Advent calls us to ask, are we preparing our hearts for him? It's a season in the church where we look to the arrival of Jesus Christ. We remember his first coming on that first Christmas, as a little baby in a manger, but we also look forward to his second coming when he returns as judge of the earth, when he will put things right, and when he will bring ultimate peace. And so this is a joyous and sacred season where we slow down, where we prepare our hearts, like that Christmas carol, "Joy to the World," we sing. Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare him room, and heaven and nature sing. I love that line. Let every heart prepare him room. And over the next few weeks in this season of Advent, we will prepare him room in our hearts. Will you do that? And so today we begin by reflecting on the reality that Jesus Christ is the coming wisdom. He's the coming wisdom of God. And we'll reflect and consider his identity and his role. His identity and his role. and we look at these famous verses from John chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Point one, the identity. He's eternal wisdom of God. He's the eternal wisdom of God. Now, a keen listener, if you've listened closely to the Bible, will know that here in John 1 relates very closely to what you hear in the opening lines of the Bible, Genesis 1, which says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." John 1 now, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God." And so this Word was there at the beginning. He was with God. It's an eternal Word in the beginning. The Old Testament also speaks of God's powerful Word in creation. How did God create? He spoke. He speaks. Genesis 1, we read, "And God said, and this was created. And God said, and so was so." And John tells us that at the beginning, this eternal Word is the one that gives a creative order to all things. Now, you'll notice the word "word" comes up a lot. This word "word" that we have in our English Bibles is a translation of the word, the Greek word "logos." So in the beginning was the Logos, and the Logos was with God, and the Logos was God. He was with God in the beginning. Now, this word "logos" probably doesn't mean much to us. But back then, it was a loaded term. It was a key part of Greek Stoic thought, which was a dominant philosophy of the time. They believed in a logos, a word or wisdom, a rationality that gives order to all of creation and the world. It's also where we derive the word logic. This logos was the reason for everything. You see, for the Stoics, this is an ordered, animate, logical universe. As I said, this philosophical idea of the Logos was heavily debated. This Logos, after all, was the reason for life. You see, what they debated at a philosophical level, we've probably all thought about at some level, perhaps some informal level. And that is, what is the reason for life? What is the reason for my life? What am I living for? What am I here for? You see, the answer to the Logos will shape your life as a whole. So let me illustrate. Let's imagine Santa's real and he got that little girl her iPhone, and you know this girl and you rock up to their house. You know, there might be a niece or someone in your life, and you see that the iPhone is being used. But to your shock and horror, it's being used as a doorstop. What would you conclude? Well, you could conclude that this is a very expensive doorstop. But also, you could conclude, perhaps more accurately, that this iPhone isn't being used properly. It's not being used to its full potential. And so that's why the Greeks debated over this logos, so they could understand the reason for life and understand, well, what am I living for? And so that they could live to their full potential. There were other Greeks at the time who believed there was no logos. They were called the Epicureans. They were materialists, and their philosophy was there was no logos, and so you lived for pleasure and comfort. This was the almost opposite desire of the Stoics, who wanted to live dutifully and rightly relate to some order in the universe. But here, in John 1, there is a logos. There is a word. Something which is the reason for everything. But this word doesn't just come from God. This word was with God. And this word was God. The logos, the rational reason for everything, the one who was from the beginning and the one who was God, however, isn't just an idea. Perhaps most shockingly, It's a person. Which brings me to point two. The identity of this coming wisdom is revealed in human flesh. Later in John chapter 1, verse 14, the Word, the Logos, we're told, became flesh and made his dwelling among us. That person is Jesus, the Logos become human flesh. Jesus of Nazareth, the Christ, we know him as the Son of God. I'm going to use another big term. This is what Christians call the incarnation. Incarnation basically means God become human. And so Jesus is the incarnate Son of God. Now the implications of this are huge. It means we don't have to guess. We don't have to wonder anymore. Is there a logos? Is there a reason to life? You see, God has smashed open a hole in time-space and he's stepped into our existence. The one who is eternal, without time, from the beginning, stepped into our time. He is wisdom revealed from above. Nikita Khrushchev, the leader of the Soviet Union, claimed that when Yuri Gagarin, the first human in space, when he went up in space, he didn't see God. He went into orbit, there was no God. And therefore, Nikita says, we have proved there is no God. Now, the author of the Narnia series, C.S. Lewis, responded to this in an essay called The Seeing Eye. And he said, the Russians, I'm told, report that they have not found God in outer space. Well, looking for God or heaven by exploring space is like reading or seeing all of Shakespeare's plays in the hope that you will find Shakespeare as one of the characters or Stratford as one of the places. You see, Hamlet can know about Shakespeare only if Shakespeare writes himself in the play. And in the same way, we only know God if he has written something about himself into our life, into our world. And the incredible thing is, he has. The claim here is that he has. God has written himself in the center of human history, in the person of his Son. Many people have tried to search for God, a logos. They search in space, they stare at a mountain, they contemplate without and within. But such a God ends up just becoming an image of what we hope it to be. But God, the eternal Word and wisdom from God, wisdom of God, has become human flesh. He has revealed himself in human history. Think of what this means. It means you can know God, the Creator. And in fact, if you want to know God, the Logos, the reason for everything, you look at Jesus Christ, the Son of God. In fact, you can't know God without knowing Jesus Christ. John 14:6, Jesus says, no one comes to the Father except through me. He is the eternal Word, the one who is God, the Word become flesh. And so as we approach Christmas and ponder that first Christmas, it should completely startle us, wake us up, absolutely shock us that God has come as a baby. And to know God is to know this child. Which brings me to my third point, his role as the all-wise author of all things. This child is Jesus, the eternal Word and wisdom of God. He is also the all-wise author of all things. The all-wise author of all things. Verse 3, John chapter 1, verse 3. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. Everything that owes its existence owe it to him. Elsewhere in the Bible, Colossians 1:16, we hear, for in him all things were created, all things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. And so Jesus is the creator. He's the creator, and he has created us. And because he has made us, we are accountable to him. Because he has made us, we are accountable to him. He has authority over our lives. I remember back in high school English, we'd often debate what an author would mean about their book or poem or a novel, etc. And everyone had an opinion. But imagine if one day the author walked into our classroom and explained truly what they meant. Well, you couldn't argue with them. They're the author. They have the final say over their work. You see, it's where we get the word author from, authority. And so let me ask you this question. Who is your author? The Bible is clear. God is the author of our lives. He made us, and he knows us better than we know ourselves. You see, unlike the flawed and broken authorities that we often try to resist, he is a good and all-wise author, the wisest. And so the wise thing to do for you and I, as we reflect on his world, we know that it doesn't come by chance. This is not a mindless, materialistic universe. It's a world created, designed, and ordered by an all-wise creator. That's why there's order, meaning, and intelligibility in the universe. It's why mathematics works. It's why DNA is coded like a language. It's why truth matters. And it means you're not an accident. Your life is not an accident. You are a masterpiece created by an all-wise creator. You're a creature of the all-wise creator. You see, the wise thing for us to do then is to listen to him, to turn to him as the authority of our life, to learn from him. He created you, he created this world. After all, he knows what's best for you and me. Yet the Bible paints a sobering picture. We all have rejected his authority. We've spurned his wisdom. Our default position is we say, my life, my rules. And by rejecting the author of life, it's not only unwise, it's dangerous. The author of our lives determines the consequences, and those who reject him face his judgment. And so why did God come? Why did Jesus come and fleshed? This is the good news of Christmas. The author hasn't abandoned his creation. He has come into the world. The author has become flesh. He's written himself. In John chapter 1, verse 4, he came so that in him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. Over the next week, we'll be reflecting on what does it mean that Christ is the coming light. And so I won't speak to that. But Jesus is the author of life. He has come to bring salvation and life. He has come so that you can know your author. You can be restored to him. And you can live under his wise and loving authority. And so do you know your author? If you know your author, this should bring huge relief and joy. You don't have to figure out life on your own. Make it up as you go. You have a logos, a reason, a purpose, a wisdom from above. You have the guidance of the one who made you, the one who knows what's best for you and your life. And so, which brings me to point 4. His role as our guide. His role as our guide. And so we are to build our life upon his wisdom. Build our life upon his wisdom. You see, it's wise for us to look for him to guidance, to build our lives on the solid foundation of his wisdom and his word. Now, yesterday I went to a 42nd birthday party. It was Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy themed. And apparently 42 is the meaning of life in that book and movie, I'm told. And, you know, it was a bit quaint and quirky and nerdy. People were wearing bathrobes around and towels. Apparently towels are really important in that book. They're very functional in traveling the galaxy. And they were trying to explain to me a little bit about, because I've never read it, never watched the movies, that this alien's come and he's stranded on Earth. He's a hitchhiker and he's writing the book Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Now, that's the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but we have a guide to our lives. We have a guide to what we're ultimately here for. You see, we've just completed a sermon series on the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus has given his ethical teaching and wisdom for how to live in his world as his people. And at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus gives an illustration of two builders. You see, one builds his house on the rock, the other builds his house on the sand. The wise builder, Jesus says, is the one who hears his words and puts them into practice. The foolish builder hears but ignores them. So what kind of builder are you? That's the question that Jesus leaves us with. In our distracted age, it's easy to fall into a number of dangers. We're perhaps too busy to even take time to hear from God's word and wisdom. But Jesus warns us of another danger. We hear it, but we fail to act on it. We fail to heed his wisdom. Both are dangerous, but Jesus is clear. Hearing without doing is not enough. As he says in Matthew 7:21, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. And so what areas of your life are you withholding from God's authority? Are you truly building your life on the unshakable rock of his wisdom? Do you look to him as the guide to your life? This Advent season is an invitation to prepare him room in our hearts, to receive him as the author of our lives, to set aside time to hear him in his word and wisdom, to examine our priorities and to bring our life under his gracious authority. Perhaps a wonderful way that you could do this Advent, this season, today. Many people do an Advent devotional, a Bible reading plan or something like that. And these practices just help us to tune out the noise, and tune into the voice, the wisdom of our Creator. You see, Advent is not just a season of waiting, it's a season of preparing. And Christian waiting and preparing is not passive, it's active and intentional as we wait for Christ's return. And so let us prepare him room in our hearts as we embrace his wisdom and live under his authority. Amen.
Thanks for listening. Please visit our website at www.stmarksdp.org to subscribe to our new episodes, browse more resources, and find more information about the community of St. Mark's.